Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post. We'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by football writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wobshaw, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @ypsport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
Right, let's kick this week's podcast off in the Premier League with Sheffield United, who paid a visit to Manchester City. Which saw the visitors claim all 3 points. The Blades will feel frustrated as in the 85th minute they got themselves level at 1-1 through Jaden Bogle before conceding 3 minutes later. What did you make of their performance, and how do you think the Blades will set up when they host fellow strugglers Everton, Stuart?
Well, I think they'll take a lot of confidence from it. I mean, the crowd were brilliant in terms of, you know, the way they got behind the team and, you know, applauded them off at the end of both halves. They clearly appreciated the efforts. I mean, you know, we've all got to be realistic about it. If you're Sheffield United playing Manchester City, it's going to be backs to the wall. You've got to eke out what you can. And, you know, as you said, for 85 minutes, it looked like the plan might just about work. But, you know, there's no question that, you know, Manchester City deserved to win. You know, they played pretty much all the football, and it was just a case of, you know, Sheffield United throwing everything they could behind it to try and grab a point. So Everton is a completely different prospect. I mean, of all the games in early season, this is the one where you need to pick up points, because frankly, Everton are in a mess. They haven't got any points yet this season. They've just made a signing this week in Beto, but whether he'll be up to speed and what have you, now is as good a time as it's probably going to get to have a home game against Everton. Sheffield United need to be more positive. I'm absolutely certain will be more positive. I said those tactics were all about Manchester City. And yeah, they need to take advantage of this opportunity, because it's one thing playing well in defeat, but, you know, we all know they've got to pick up points if they're going to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, I totally echo that. I mean, for a lot of games this season, you know, not just on the travels, but at home, it's going to be about Sheffield United against the big hitters. It's going to be about mentality, togetherness, concentration, organisation, a lot of things that served them well in the Championship, and they've still got a hardcore core of players still there. It's going to be a real dogfight and scrap. And I think I mentioned last week, you sort of look at the bottom of the Premier League. It's not quite set in stone yet, but I don't think too many will be surprised if, you know, there's half a dozen clubs who are in that vicinity are going to be there at the end of the season. And every point's going to be so precious, and it's going to certainly magnify the games between the teams down there. In you know, effectively, it could turn into a mini league. So, you know, Sheffield United are in good company, aren't they? Really, I mean, I had a look the other day, and probably not the biggest surprise, but none of the promoted sides have actually got a point yet. I suppose there's a little bit of a caveat because Luton haven't played at home yet. But I think the fact that they showed such, you know, defiance, and, you know, and it's one of those that a point would have seemed like a win for Sheffield United against Manchester City. You know, and they were very close to doing that. Obviously, City's quality shone through at the end. And, you know, Stuart's right to say this game against Everton, you know, it leaps from the page, doesn't it? It's, you know, you look at the games that Sheffield United have had so far, anything from City would have been a bonus. But, you know, this one, especially at home, you know, it has the makings of a real six-pointer, and they're probably going to have to be a little bit more proactive in the forward play and taking the game a bit more to Everton, and it'd be fascinating to see if Cameron Archer gets the nod. They've obviously paid shelled out another significant investment on top of what they paid for Gus Hamer and I don't know what Stuart thinks. I think those two are going to be huge players for Sheffield United if they're going to achieve the season's aims. I think being sort of looking at them, I'd maybe like to see them bring in another defender as well. We'll have to see on that, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree with Leon. I think they're both really good signings. You know, they were both two of the better players in the Championship last season, and they bring the sort of things that Sheffield United lack. And I think we've already seen both of them pay off small instalments. Obviously, Harmer scored on his debut, but I think you saw in the way Ollie McBurney performed when he came off the bench, possibly a bit of response to the fact that Cameron Archer's been signed essentially to take his place. That, you know, when managers talk about competition for places, that's what they're on about. McBurney was very, very good as a shoot for half an hour or so. So, I would expect Archer would be the one leading the line. But, you know, if not, McBurney should be a more motivated, better player for it. So one way or the other, they should be better off. And just, you know, expanding on the importance of the Everton game, you look at the games to come. You know, later this month they've got Spurs, Newcastle, and West Ham. There's a real danger where they get into the position they were last season. I think last season it was 17 games before they got a win. This is their big opportunity to avoid that, because they've got Man United and Arsenal to come in October as well. There's some difficult games coming up. So Manchester City was a good shot in the arm in terms of morale. But they need to follow it up with points, because you can't. There's not much confidence you can take if you're looking at a league table at the start of October or whatever, and you haven't got a point to your name. So they really need to cash in on this opportunity. Everton, we've seen over the last couple of seasons, start badly, pull it out the fight it's on, and you know, when Goodison rallies together, you know, when they're change manager, you know, and when they're really staring things in the face, at this stage they just look a bit of a shambles of the club. So catch them when they're cold, take advantage of it. Of course, it's easier said than done, because it's not exactly like Sheffield United have hit the ground running by any means. So it's going to be a real squeaky bum game, and it's really important, I think, that Sheffield United take something out of it.
You mentioned in your report, Stuart, you made a good point that, well, I think it's more than a good point, that the crowd's going to be huge. I mean, obviously there's on the pitch, but that you look at the sides down there, that the supporters are going to play such a big part, especially in the home game. I mean, you look at Luton, every game's going to be, you know, it's a real adventure for them. The atmosphere at Kenilworth Road, it's obviously not the biggest ground in the world, and homely, shall we say, rather than sort of spectacular. But they're going to be so up for it every sort of home game. The backing's going to be incessant. And, you know, it was great to hear that, you know, we're all together, the Sheffield United fans, are real cauldron. And it's, you know, it's like that at its best. And, you know, I just hope that, you know, if there's going to be a point in the season where they will go 5-6 games unbeaten, hopefully not too many more, but you know, that's the time that you'll really need your supporters, and it's going to be massive as well on Saturday. They're going to be a big help if Sheffield United are going to pull themselves over the line this season, as they will be for, you know, the other sort of promoter clubs there in Luton and Burnley. You know, it's just so important that they stick with them, you know, through the tough times. I mean, in some respects, it's relatively easy to get behind a side when they're playing the champions, a side who are the best team in Europe, better on a 1-to-1 level in terms of quality. You know, the supporters bought into that quickly, but it's it's the other games as well where they'll really need them.
Yeah, and in terms of those games, I was really struck. I was there on the opening day of the season when they played Crystal Palace, and you know, they'd had a really demoralising summer. They just signed Gustavo Hamer overnight, but he wasn't on the field, so there weren't any any real new signings. It was a far weaker team than last season. And even in that game, I think the crowd realised the job they had to do and took it on quite willingly. So, you know, a lot was made the last Sheffield United were relegated about the absence of fans. It's kind of a put your money where your mouth is situation now. But, you know, the early signs have been excellent. They've been really supportive. And they are going to need that because, let's face it, they need every little thing they can tilt their way to make up this gap in terms of, you know, in terms of resources and preparedness. And as I say, I think the
1%, isn't it? A little 1%.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, and you get the sense that the fans understand that and are very willing to take it on. You know, it'll get harder. You know, as Leon says, if the winless run continues, but right now they're exactly where they need them to be, and hopefully that can tip the balance against Everton.
And next, we turn our attention to Leeds United in the Championship, who finally claimed their first victory of the season with a 4-3 win over Ipswich, who going into this game had a 100% record. The game saw goals from Ruta, Wilfred Nonto, and a debut goal for Joel Pirro. The benefits of the club's ability to resolve the issues surrounding Nonto and Sinisterra were quite evident. What was your assessment of the game, and what do you think Jed Spence can bring to the side, Stuart?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think it was a really good week for Leeds United and for Daniel Farke in particular. You know, not just to beat Ipswich, but, you know, just the list of goal scorers. You know, Routier, absolutely desperate for his first goal for Leeds, gets it. Nonto and Sinisterra reintegrated into the side. Daniel Farke's had a real show of strength, showed that it won't be messed about, brought these lads back in. It's all very reminiscent of, you know, the way he worked things with Brendia and Cantwell. Both of them don't just come back in, but score. And Joel Pirro scores on his debut. So it was all positive. Obviously, they took a little bit of a step back on Tuesday, losing to Salford on penalties. I mean, they completely outplayed Salford, but it did highlight some of the problems, as did that Ipswich game. They are quite fallible at the back. Against Salford, they didn't take their chances either. Now, Pirro wasn't playing. He was cup-tied, having already scored for Swansea in the competition. So hopefully he'll go some way to addressing that. Willie Nonto was excellent in terms of running at players, but there was just a sort of lack of end product. So Leeds need to sort of stay sharp at that end, and they need to work on things at the back. Now, the signing, I mean, the thing that really stood out with Jed Spence season before last, when he won promotion with Forest, was his attacking play as a right back. But he will add something to them defensively as well. I mean, he was one of the best players in the Championship that season, and it was just an odd quirk that he was on loan from Middlesbrough, who had another of the best players in the division in Isaiah Jones. It was a very strange and very, you know, good position for Borough to be in. But yeah, I think he'll add a lot. I think, like a lot of Farke signings, he knows the course and distance in terms of getting teams out of the Championship. He's a quality player who's just, you know, lost his way for a year, but hopefully he can get back on it. I think it was a position Leeds needed to address, because we've seen some good things from Luke Ayling this season, you know, great goal against West Bromwich Albion. Daniel Farke likes to play his fullbacks high, but at times Ayling was struggling to get back and Leeds were being a bit exposed down that side. So hopefully Spence's sort of greater youth and athleticism will make up for that. As we speak, you know, we're still expecting a couple more Leeds signings in. They're certainly working hard at them. And as I've said before on this podcast, I've got a lot of confidence that Farke will pick the right people. So I think things are moving in the right direction for Leeds United, but there are still big areas that need to address. And we do see with Farke teams that they do often start seasons slowly and build into them in the Championship years. Definitely work to do, but it felt like a really positive week last week.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a sort of good start to sort of the final window week, if you like, with bringing in Spence. Obviously brings a hell of a lot to the table going forward. Not massively sure about him defensively wise, but You know, he's certainly got athleticism and pace, and I'm sure the Leeds supporters will buy into him in terms of what he brings to the table, especially defensively. But yeah, it was, you know, we've spoken about Fart before, and you know, I think both Stuart and myself like the cut of his jib. He's had early issues and tests. He's not felt sorry for himself. He's laid the law down. He's obviously got Gonto and Sinisterra back in the fold. You know, you sort of look at it. I was sort of speaking with people ahead of the weekend's games, and I quite fancied Leeds to turn over Ipswich. I just had a sort of a funny feeling. You know, obviously, there's a lot of expectation on the shoulders of Ipswich, who've had a brilliant start to the season, outstanding in the final third of last season in League One, and they were the class side from what I saw. So that was a, you know, tremendous win. A little bit of a blow in midweek in the cup, but I think if Leeds can have a sound end to the window, and obviously they've got a Yorkshire derby with Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday, if they can, for their sakes, obviously Wednesday, they've got their own reasons to want to get something from it before the window. If Leeds can get a positive result there, finish the window well, that I think, given the adversity that they've had in high summer, it'll have been a decent start for them. And and credit to Daniel Farker, he's sort of showing that he's a safe pair of hands and a good operator.
Yeah, I would say more than a safe pair of hands. You know, he's showing that he won't be messed with, and
yeah,
I think that Ipswich win was basically built on the back of the feel good factor that he's generated with the way he's dealt with this. Yeah. I mean, some people might be listening to this on September the 2nd. You'll by now whether Owen Sinisterra have actually stayed. Not 100% certain whether Sinisterra will, but. I think to face down Nando like that was really important for the rest of his tenure at Leeds United. It just sent out a really big message, and has done him a lot of favours, I think, with the Leeds United fans when he hasn't had the early results to cling to. So I think we'll look back on this as a really important week in Farker's time at the club.
Yeah, it's obviously a big if, Stuart, but if they do manage to keep them, then, you know, those two and you bring Hero into the mix, that's a three that will really worry the overwhelming majority of Championship teams, isn't it, really? You know, those bring a lot to the table. Obviously, Gonto and Sinisterra with the pace and the trickery and directness, and obviously an outlet down the middle to score goals now. So, for Leeds' sake, you know, that'd be very important and really augur well for the autumn and winter time when the table really, you know, crystallises.
And Hull City is our next stop in the Championship, who had to settle for a point when they welcomed Bristol City to the MKM Stadium. Ozan Tufan claimed his fourth goal of the season when he opened the scoring for the Tigers before the visitors equalised late on in the second half. How do you think Liam Rossini will feel after his side's start to the season, Leon?
I think he'll be reasonably pleased. Obviously, like any manager, he'll have wanted more. Hull haven't managed to win three games in league games in a row in his tenure, and I think it's something they haven't done since right at the start of the new regime, January 2022. So, yeah, I suppose that's one to get to tick off, but they're going the right way. They've got a decent continuity of selection defensively. They're well structured, and they're obviously playing through the thirds, possession football, and they look one of those teams that, you know, if they can, obviously we're talking before the end of the window, and it looks like Hull are going to be quite busy. Obviously, brought in Ryan Alsop as a goalkeeping option. There's the lad at Aston Villa, Philogy, and that one's reasonably close. So they're going to be one of the busier teams, before the end of the window. And to build on what they've what they've already got. They've got some good signings in there. Scott Twine, I've liked the look of Liam Delap. And I think they can be reasonably pleased, but you know, they've set themselves up nicely for the autumn.
And I think two fans are a good sort of emblem for Liam Rossini's time, just as he was actually a good emblem for Charles's time. You know, when they signed him, it seemed like almost an example of where they were going wrong, of signing these fantasy players who weren't really knuckling down and, you know, fitting into the team structure. And, you know, you thought in January, you thought that would be Tufan gone. They didn't really fit into what Liam Rossini needed. But Rossini's obviously got into him and he's obviously responded extremely well to become the sort of person that you can rely on, not just this luxury player, but this person who fits into the structure. And he's been a real bonus when, you know, you look a lot of the signings made last summer just didn't work for one reason or another. He has been one who was actually adapted to this new way of thinking, and it's obviously saved Hull a lot of money in the transfer market and been a real bonus for them that this quality player has, frankly, shown what he's capable of.
Yeah, they just don't look a team of individuals anymore, do they, Stuart? And you know, they've got a lot more of a structure without the ball, and he looks a lot fitter as well, Tufan as well. And he's, you know, he was up for the press recently, and he was speaking about how hard he worked in the off season, you know, back in Turkey on his own. And I think credit to the lad as well. I suppose it would have been easy just to sort of say, well, this isn't particularly working, and he'll go back to Turkish football, where I'm sure he's got a hell of a lot of suitors. But no, he kept his head down. He's part of the journey at Hull, and he clearly wants to do something. And obviously he's got four goals, and he's scored some different type of goals, classic goals as well. And you know, all power to him. And yeah, Hull are going the right way. It's been interesting to see what happens at the end of the window. There's obviously talk of Estupiñán, who was the top scorer last year. He's got interest in Spain, one or two others as well. But yeah, Liam Rossini knows what he wants, and you know, he's got as well as the individual talents he's got there, it's within a team framework, which is, you know, at Championship level is so important.
And next, we turn to Rotherham United, where the Millers fell to a 2-1 defeat when they hosted Leicester City. The Millers, who were fired up as the match went on, had an early goal by Jordan Hugel ruled out for offside before they drew level 8 minutes into the second half through Fred Onyedinma. Although the Millers have had a fairly slow start to the season, is there any cause for concern for the fans, Leon?
I think it's one of those, unfortunately. We're not out before the end of the window. I think if you spoke to the Rotherham fans, you'd say sort of ask us on probably Saturday morning, or maybe after the Norwich game on Saturday afternoon, really. But they're desperate to do some key pieces of business before the 11 o'clock deadline. They're in for Brian Nomne, who Matt Taylor knows well from his time at Exeter. Barnsley were also in for him, but it looks like he'll be Sam, isn't it? He'll they've won the race for his services, and you hope they can get that over the line. We want it to go in the other way as well amongst the fringe players. Barnsley keen on Josh Coyote and Jamie McCart, so there could be movement there. But yeah, they just look. You know, you look at the games that Rotherham have played this season. I mean, apart from really the, in terms of the league anyway, I wouldn't read too much into the big cup defeat in midweek, because, you know, he had to be very pragmatic with his selection, Matt Taylor. You know, apart from the 45 minutes against Stoke, when they went off the rails, they've really been in games and competed. They were very unlucky against Blackburn. Obviously, we've spoken before about the, you know, a hugely controversial and wrong decision to send off Adoni Nima. So, Rotherham played well enough in that game. They competed at Sunderland as well. And, you know, against Leicester, you know, you looked at the team sheet beforehand and, you know, especially the bench, how much, you know, power Leicester had. And Rotherham, you know, they played pretty well. They were front foot, they were aggressive. It wasn't just a case of, you know, you Sheffield United against Manchester City and stopping them in how they were playing. Rotherham were, you know, dictating to Leicester and, you know, pushing their own game onto them. But they just needed that. They couldn't really change it, you know, too much from the bench. And the sort of Leicester's quality told in the end, and they obviously scored a goal towards the end to win the game. They just need a few more Rotherham sort of players with, you know, a bit more potency in attack who can get a goal or two. And, you know, they just don't have too many of those. That's where you sort of worry. But, yeah, if they can do the business that Matt Taylor wants, he got a bit of money in the money to spend as well after selling Ben Wiles to Huddersfield, then you just hope that they might have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, Rotherham have been very realistic in the transfer window and very patient. And it's a fine line sometimes between patient and passive, you know, and time will tell which side of that line they were. I mean, you just wish from their point of view, I suppose, that they'd have got the Ben Wiles money a bit earlier so they could have been a bit more aggressive in the transfer window. But we'll see. I mean, you know, it might be that we end up saying, well, by waiting to the last minute, they're able to get X, Y, and Z who were quality, you know, loan players in. We just don't know at this stage. You know, whoever comes in is going to come in late. So I wouldn't be overly optimistic having seen Norwich. We'll talk about that in a minute. But having seen Norwich at the weekend, I wouldn't be too optimistic about the chances at home to Norwich, given that, you know, these players are still going to be bedding their way into things. So the game at home, away to Huddersfield straight after the international break really looms large. You know, I've banged the drum a few times on this podcast about so many of our teams not really being ready for the start of the season until after that international break, but all excuses are gone then. You know, they really have to be at it then. I think it's just, as Leon says, it's a difficult one to judge until the window is closed. I mean, it looks like they have made a couple of good signings already in Tiahi and on in Inma, if I can say it properly.
You struggled as much as I did with that one, didn't you?
I did. They both look like they can be good additions, you know. So hopefully we'll be saying that about the ones still to come. It's just frustrating that so many points will have been and gone before that window is closed.
It's difficult for them, isn't it, Stuart? Obviously, with the Rotherham need firepower, don't they? Really, and firepower invariably costs quite a bit of money. And even in terms of loan signings, if you're wanting, you know, quality, you know, a fairly decent quality wise goal scorer in the Championship, it's not going to be cheap. And they've obviously lined up Nombe. He's done well for Exeter in League One, but it's obviously a step up coming to the Championship. And you know, we have to see who they, you know, you would think as well that they might go for a lone striker or two, because I think they need more than just one in up front, really. I mean, he does so much work. Jordan Hugel, I mean, we might even go on to talk about the situation with Danny Ward at Huddersfield. You know, he does so much selfless work and battles with the defenders, but, you know, it probably a cost in some respects. He's not going to be there sniffing around for the sort of you know, the tappings and the predatory goals, really, because he does so much sort of selfless work otherwise. So yeah, I think the main thrust of it for Rotherham at the end of the window will be just getting a couple more attacking options just to hopefully give them a bit more of a goal scoring impetus.
And next on our list is Huddersfield Town, who followed up their 1-1 draw against Middlesbrough with a heavy defeat by Norwich City, who maintained their 100% record this season. The Terriers were 2-0 down inside the first 20 minutes, but that's not to say that Huddersfield Town didn't have their chances, as Josh Caroma went very close with a free kick attempt before David Wagner's men took control. Knowing that Huddersfield's next game is a visit to the Hawthorns, how did you rate the performance, and what changes could we see from Neil Warnock, Stuart?
Well, to me, it feels a bit similar to a lot of the things we were saying about Jesse Marsh's Leeds United this time this year. They play quite well at times against Norwich from tee to green, but they are making big mistakes at both ends of the field, and you just can't afford that. It seems like a regular theme already this season where you're saying about Huddersfield, they played well. And the most disturbing thing for me is that most of these defensive mistakes are coming from the players you would normally hang your hat on. They're not coming from, by and large, from, you know, young kids who are new to the league. They're coming from the likes of Petty Pearson, Nichols, Jonathan Hogg, Mikhail Helic, players who we know are really good players at this level and who you can normally really rely on. So that's a bit of a puzzler for Neil Warnock. And then at the other end, it's kind of a bit same old. I mean, Leon's already touched on it. In Danny Ward, they've got a very good striker in terms of sort of contributing to the play, holding up the ball, doing all the mucky stuff that, you know, a lot of players don't like to do, but there just aren't enough goals either from him or around him to compensate for it. I mean, I'm hoping that Ben Wiles will help in that respect. You know, he showed at Rotherham what a good eye for goal he's got, but it's going to take more than one player. As we speak, Huddersfield are still scouring the pocket forward, but much like Rotherham, they just need finishes. You know, Josh Caroma shows you flashes at times, but you just can't bank on him as a goal scorer. This Doney gets good positions, but he just doesn't finish them off enough. You know, they just need to find a bit more from that. You know, and as for what Warnock's going to do next, well, a question about those, you know, defensive mistakes and where they're coming from. And he said, well, you know, these are good players. I'm going to give them every opportunity to work it through, sort of thing. I mean, obviously, places will come under threat once Tom Lees gets fit. Maybe Yuta Nakayama can put a bit of pressure on. I say for now, Neil Warnock's kind of relying on those players to work it out for themselves. But you just can't rely on that forever, and something is going to have to change.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly, I think for me, Stuart, they're definitely another forward option, don't they? As well, they've obviously brought in Berzog and the little cameo that he showed at Middlesbrough, you know, he did put himself back. He's a decent size and looks to have a bit of pace, but it's going to be one of those probably seasons again where Huddersfield are going to have to share the goals around. So bringing in another option in addition to Berzog, they've obviously got Ward and Caroma. You know, it could be so important for them. But I think equally that it's a time for holding a bit of nerve as well. I mean, and without being too critical of the chairman, I was surprised by, it was obviously very disappointing with a lot of Huddersfield fans after the, you know, after the score on Saturday, and obviously he went onto social media to make his feelings known, and I'm saying it's an unacceptable performance, blah blah. I just think sometimes it can be a little bit better to keep your sort of powder dry. We're still only in the summer, still just about in August, so. You know, we haven't got into the guts of the season by any means, and you know, Neil Warnock has shown he's a shrewd operator at championship level, can be trusted. He's been in all manner and types of scenarios. So yeah, I think it's just a little bit early to panic, even, you know, take into account the fact that it was a heavy defeat.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness to Kevin Argyle, he did track about an hour and a half. But it was the timing of it as much as anything to tweet that when the manager was speaking to the media. I mean, you know, Neil Warnock is your expert on the ground, so at least at least wait and see what he said before you reach your own conclusion, I think. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very, one of the things that really winds me up at this time of year is people producing league tables so early in the season, because they're just irrelevant at this stage. There aren't enough games, you know, for the...
I should hope they are, looking at the Yorkshire teams at the bottom, Stuart.
Exactly. But they're still coming for the championship. But yeah, that kind of feeds into this impatience that, you know, and we obviously we've got lots of clubs at the wrong end of those league tables right now, and the obvious reaction is just to panic about the fact that your team's bottom of the table or in the bottom three or whatever it is. You can't be complacent about it, but equally you can't be knee-jerk. And Norwich City are an extremely good team. You know, they were really good on the counter-attack. They look like under David Wagner. They've got themselves sorted out to be a real force this season.
And finally for this week, we turn to Sheffield Wednesday, who are still searching for their first point of the season after falling to what can only be described as an incredibly frustrating 2-1 defeat when Cardiff City scored a winning goal in the 98th minute. Now, seeing as their next game sees them pay a visit to Elland Road, and knowing that both Leeds United and Sheffield Wednesday lost in the cup on penalties, what can the Owls do to try and turn their fortunes around? And how much pressure do you think Xisco Muñoz is under at the moment, Leon?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say he's under the microscope. He spoke from the heart. I did the midweek game, the EFL Cup against Mansfield, and it was a funny one. I mean, in some respects, it's a classic trait of a side who things aren't going particularly well for. They actually played decent for the most part, and they should have put the tie to bed. They hit the woodwork a couple of times. The Mansfield keeper Christy Pym had a pretty good game. And for decent parts, they played pretty well Wednesday, but they just couldn't get that second goal. And quite often when a team's struggling, you know, Mansfield sort of sensed that, scored a late equaliser, and then went on to win on penalties. And there were a few grumbles at the end from Wednesday nights. And it's just not going for Xisco at the minute, isn't it? And they've got a huge derby coming up at Leeds United on Saturday. If Sheffield Wednesday do manage to lose that, they've got the international break. Then if things don't improve reasonably quickly after that, then I think he's under a real big amount of pressure, really. They've obviously, look at the start of the season, they're bedding in new players, quite a few of them from overseas. They're still clearly finding the feet at championship level. There's a lot going on, you know, with the squad, which players are going to be, part of it going forward. We haven't even seen a sniff of Marvin Johnson so far this season. You know, they obviously come in Muñoz and trying to get a new way of playing. Obviously promoted to the championship from League One. I just think, you know, really, I think Wednesday should have been a bit more just pragmatic for me. There was obviously the statement from the chairman saying, in terms of his aims for the season, and they sort of contrasted with what he'd been talking about with Darren Moore, and it basically led to Moore's departure. This season for me is all about Wednesday just consolidating and retaining the championship status. And, you know, for the majority of last season, they were a strong core. They were hard to beat. They weren't necessarily brilliant on the eye, but they had an effective sort of way of playing for the most part. And, you know, they've sort of seemed to have sort of lost a bit of that. You look at the late goals that they've also been conceding at the start of this season, which is a worry. So, yeah, at the minute, it feels like a little bit of a perfect storm is brewing, and you just hope for Muñoz's sake that it blows over. But he's certainly under pressure, and obviously if they get a bad result at the weekend, it'll intensify.
Yeah, I mean, this feels to me like another case in point of needing patience. I think, you know, Leon's already outlined it. New manager, a whole load of new signings, 10 new signings, yeah, as we speak. Most of them from overseas. It is going to take time to bed in. They were, by all accounts, very good against Cardiff until they conceded a late goal as well. So they're clearly making small steps, but also, you know, there's a long way to go. I think Muñoz could help himself by involving more of the players more often who are adapted to English football already. A bit disappointed to see Reece James was an unused substitute in the League Cup. I would have thought that would have been a good opportunity to throw him on and say, look, everybody's saying you should be in the team. Show me why you should be in the team. You know, so I do think he needs to help himself, but I do think that they need a bit of patience. You know, we heard boos at times at Hillsborough. You know, last season, even when they won promotion, it's a club with high expectations. You know, it should have high expectations with its history and its stature. But you do need that patience mixed in with it. And but who knows on Saturday? I mean, actually, Wednesday have had some pretty good results against Leeds. Yeah, you know, the last few years they've played together in the Championship. You know, Gary Monk always used to enjoy going back, and some of his predecessors too had some good results there. So you can, you know, they shouldn't be too defeatist about it. But I just think it's going to be a slow process, and there needs to be more realism, starting with the chairman. You know, all this talk early season, as Leon's alluded to, about going for the playoffs, just not sensible. You know, it had to be about consolidation. And if, you know, if you performed above expectations and the playoffs opened up, great. But it was too high a bar to set. And, I think he's going to need time. I worry that he's not going to get the time. But I do think people need to hold their nerve at Hillsborough right now, difficult though it might be.
Yeah,
you just hope for their sakes, Stuart, that they just manage to get a couple of wins in September. Just that will hopefully buy them a little bit of time, won't it? Really, because I mean, obviously we've got the game on Saturday, but I think once you get into the you get into the autumn, and you know, for a lot of people, it's when the season really starts. If you know, this thing about obviously performing with a fair degree of encouragement, if it's not married up by getting points as well, you know, it really does increase the angst among supporters. I think at the minute with Wednesday, there's been a certain amount of realism from the supporters. It was obviously a shortened pre-season from winning the playoffs. They've had a lot of upheaval with the manager leaving, big turnover of new players sort of coming in, and it's going to take time, but obviously once we get into the autumn, it's that patience, and Stuart's right to say that there needs to be a certain degree of patience, but there's got to be a bit of progress and a bit of hope as well. And you know, when the games come relatively thick and fast, you've got to chip away with a win or two.
They might need a bit of luck as well. You know, it might be they just dropped the guard in the last couple of minutes. And what they'll need is for Leeds to hit the woodwork like they did when they were battering Salt late on, you know, rather than hitting the back of the net. You know, it could be that we end up looking back on a game like that and saying, well, that's where things turn for them. Or it could be, you know, we're looking at it and it just follows into this pattern. And as I said, Munoz doesn't get time to turn it around. There's a lot riding on this game, say, against a Leeds team who just feel a lot more buoyant right now. So that they are going to need to hold their nerve, and they will come under pressure in that game, because we know what good attacking players Leeds have got. But as we alluded to earlier, they can be vulnerable defensively as well. And if Wednesday get the chance, they've got to take advantage of it.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Leon Wobschall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.